My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome to a new week of the show. It's Friday, new episode day. I've got a returning guest and more of that Soundstone Network synergy. We've got Gooey from Flashback 64. If you haven't listened to his podcast, Gooey and McKenna both do a cool chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. They cover all the games in release order, and then on their main episodes, and then on in-between weeks, cover a bunch of things that were important of the same era and release era from the months that they covered. So, super fun show. Read more about it or listen to it through soundstone.network. Links in the show notes below. But yeah, Goo has been on the show before. Y'all probably recognize his voice. It's always fun to chat with him, and this was a fun conversation to have. So look for him in the future episodes as well, too. That's going to be after the ad break and after the little intro jump here. So if you want to skip ahead, please go ahead and do that. But if you're going to continue to listen, let me at least plug some of my stuff as I usually do. Last week on the 8th of August, I'm recording this before the 8th of August, and it's going to come out on the week after the 8th. So I guess it doesn't matter. On the 8th, the release of Beat 'em Up Volume 1 happened. So you can now find that on internationally. You can find it on Amazon pages. So, you know, Canada or Europe or the different, you know, dot whatever domains for your version of Amazon. You should hopefully be able to find it and get the cheapest shipped way to you to pick up that book. If you are in the U.S., order it directly from me at pixelsandpolygons.net, and don't trust and support that giant massive corporation unless you absolutely have to. It helps me to order it directly from me more so than Amazon anyway. So enjoy that. That is the first volume. I plan to do a couple of them in between the other big projects and everything, kind of talking about the major beat-em-up franchises. This first volume discusses Final Fight as a franchise, all of its games, development history and details, the impact on the genre itself, and just some kind of notes and images and just fun along the way. So if you're a fan of the genre or a fan of Final Fight specifically, like, it's a great book for you. But also in the future, I plan to cover, you know, the other heavy hitters, you know, things like Streets of Rage, as well as anecdotal and like one-off ones as well too, in another volume. So yeah, if you like it, check it out. Tell friends about it. Look at it, rate and review it, whatever you can do to support. That would be much appreciated. Retro Game Zine, the current issue you should already know about. It is the Blaster Master issue with Mike Drucker. That's available on pixelsandpolygons.net. You can also find it digitally with all my stuff at patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. Again, those notes are in the show notes below on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. If you got friends who like games and things like that and you want to send them my way, please do. It would be much appreciated. And even for the podcast, if you want to like and review and rate it and share it and tell people about it, please do. That is a free way you can support the show and help me out. So, yeah. Otherwise, continuing to plug away at the next 32-bit library book, which is going to be a greatest hits volume. So it's my excuse to play games from smaller publishers or even larger publishers who have too large of a catalog that I definitely wouldn't cover in the normal format, but play them all under the same gathered umbrella of games that were re-released in that greatest hits label from Sony. So, you know, like, things, you can mix things up in like Star Wars, Dark Forces, and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and Cool Borders 2, and what else? Croc. There's a lot of cool variety of things in there. So hopefully Y'all enjoy that if you've been enjoying the 32-bit library series. Otherwise, I think that's it. This episode will be releasing the week after I'm back from Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. I have not actually done that yet, so hopefully I have a great weekend. That's coming up this weekend, technically, from when I'm recording this. So wish me luck there, and or I'm back and you're listening to this because it was fun, and future Darren enjoyed himself. Otherwise, that's all I got. After the ad break, catch the conversation with me and Goo, and otherwise, see y'all next Friday with another new episode. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I don't know why I read it in slightly different cadence there or anything, but
you were sounding like, is this, should I change this? That's what your tone.
Yeah, that's what sometimes I'm worried my tone might be too flat. And like, I'm like, oh, I should have like some more energy or some more like, I don't know, like excitement in my voice. Maybe I'm too bland sounding or something.
No, it's perfect. It's like the way you read that was, it was fun. It ended up being funny, I think, like whether intentional or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Straight accident. All right. You heard him. Our guest for this episode is Goo from the Soundstone Network, in addition to Flashback 64 and all the other creative endeavors he does. He's a musician that he doesn't talk about as much, you know, but playing some shows later this year, you know, maybe near you.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'll promote those more when, my band has discussed it. We haven't discussed it since Do You Want to Do This?
Oh, so the offer was there, you agreed to do it, and since then there hasn't been anything. How much time before the actual show do you think you'll like get together to actually practice, or will it be so much as like just know these songs, no need to practice, we're just gonna fuck it, we'll do it live?
No, we definitely need to practice. Our drummer this band Empire Was a Lonely Estate is the name of the band, and our drummer told me he hadn't really played since we stopped being a band. We're getting back together for the show, and that was 10 years ago. So he's got to practice for sure. He's really, really good, though. He's like a drum machine, so I think he'll get into shape. But then, yeah, me, I definitely got to practice. But we were talking about the month before playing like a tune-up show as well. The problem is I live in Illinois and they live in Michigan. So I might have to do a lot more of like on my own brushing up, and then maybe we'll get together like a couple months before and jam it out or something. That's, I think, the plan. So here's some insider info on how that band is operating.
Mentally picturing a map of the United States, Illinois and Michigan aren't that far, right? I mean, how long of that drive would that be for you?
It'll probably be, since I move now, I think like 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
Because you got to dip around a bit around. Like, if you live in Chicago and you're going to, like, Grand Rapids, it is, like, a hop, skip, and a jump. But then I'm going a little bit farther into Michigan. And I live now on, like, the other... I live pretty close to even the Wisconsin border. So I have to do, like, dip around Lake Michigan. I'm sure people love thinking about the routes that I'm taking to Michigan. But I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. We just haven't really, you know... I think we got a little bit of time. It's not like we're not slacking. I promise.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's cool. Yeah. It's always been a
it always was a dream of mine. There's not any way I'm fulfilling that dream anymore, but to like be in a band and play like live shows and all that stuff. Like, I'm not in any situation at 38 that I'm going to put something together and start playing some shows. So I could probably just let, you know, sadly, this is Darren realizing now that that dream is just a dream that will never be fulfilled. And
you do some open mics still.
We were at a bar in this Misfits Danzig cover band.
Hell yeah.
They were playing, and a couple members of the band were in, like Death by Stereo, who was a band I liked from Orange County and stuff. But we were there, and we were at a bar, and they were playing, and then they just like called somebody up to help sing We Are 138 by the Misfits. And so I fucking just jumped up there. I was like, that's going to be me. Did it all, like sang the whole thing. It was like side by side on the stage singing it. And I was like, this is fucking rad, dude. Like, yes. And then I got off and I was super excited to go back to like my wife and my friends and all that stuff. No one took the initiative to like, hey, maybe a picture or a video like would be cool. Like, maybe Darren will want to see this again or something. This is rad. Nobody captured that moment at all. And it's just like, wait, really? Y'all, like, nobody did this for me? Like, you saw me going up there and everything. And yeah, so it's just a personal memory. No one knows that I really did it and sang a song with them on stage and everything, but I did. And yeah.
Oh, well. I saw Danzig once. It was pretty bad. Actually, I've seen Danzig and I've seen the Misfits, but not like together. And both times it was pretty bad.
Wait, what's Misfits version did you see? Like, did you see one of these like reunion-y one, or actually like with Michael Graves or something?
Oh, who was it? Was I'm trying to remember. It was definitely one of the ones where it wasn't Michael Graves. It was like a three piece.
Oh, so that was Jerry only who's trying to do the singing duties, I think.
Yeah. I think they had like Dez was in there. Yeah, it was not good.
It was essentially one member of the Misfits and then a member of like Black Flag and a member of like, it was like they could have just been
the
like
Ramones,
a cover band.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have just been a cover band for all three of those bands and all stuff. But for some reason, they just agreed that this was the Misfits and they were playing Misfit songs, even though it was 33% of the bands or of the band was a member of actually the original Misfits and everything. It didn't make any sense. God. That was a weird era for them for sure.
They stunk.
But you saw them. Oh, okay, they weren't good. Yeah, I didn't think
Danzig.
They would be.
Danzig was bad too. Actually, we got free tickets to Danzig, and we left like one. We're like, I can't wait a whole set list to hear Mother. You know, so I'm leaving. You know,
we had tickets last year to see that Misfits reunion. You know, that with everybody back and everything out here in Arizona. It was in an outdoor amphitheater. You know, which isn't a bad thing, I guess. You know, but an outdoor amphitheater in the middle of July in Arizona when it was 112 degrees. Like, no, we had tickets. We were excited to see it. We were going to put up with it and figure it out. And then like once it came show day and we just like opened up the door and we just felt the wall of heat hit us. Like the idea of us like standing around waiting for them to play, potentially even like drinking and like, you know, just getting dehydrated and hot. Just like, we were like, forget it. I guess we're just not going to see him. Like, we're just going to burn these tickets and just not go. And so we just skipped the show.
Horrible.
And AFI was one of the openers for him too. And like as a teenager, they were one of my favorite bands and all that stuff. So I thought it'd been rad to just, you know, see them all together. But it was just that heat, you know, made that decision real easy for us. Like, no, nope.
That's fair.
All right.
It's a game. Gaming.
Yeah, that is Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about music. We're here again with GUI. Let's just jump into some this or that's. We know the format. We can make up for this time. Would you rather, let's say arcade or console?
Ooh, well, I mean, traditionally console, but I am growing fond of arcades.
SNES music or Genesis music? Mega Drive for you EU fans.
I like both. Neither one are like my classics. I didn't really grow up with either. They're in the periphery, but I guess I'll go SNES.
Okay. Biased opinion.
Yep.
Nintendo boy over here going with Nintendo.
I do love
stuff.
When we played Gunstar Heroes on our show, I was like, man, the Genesis does sound so radical. Like, it does sound, it sounds cooler. I will give it that.
Yeah, the Genesis does what Nintendo don't.
Yeah.
Sonic or Knuckles to keep it in the Sega family?
Ooh. Well, I did always like when I played, I did play Sonic 3 a lot on my PC as a kid, and I would, it would let you pick, and I would pick Knuckles, to be fair.
Hmm. Let's go with Ryu or Ken.
Oh, okay. I'm picturing them as, well, I'll say Ryu, but the immediate picture in my mind, because I'm not a big fighting game player, was I was thinking of their movie appearance.
Oh, I would say Ryu as well, like really like emphasize the Ryu, but it's really Ryu. And I don't know why. Yeah, I know that.
I just was going with what you said. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I set you up for that. It's my apologies for, you know, shaming you as a guest into saying something wrong. But
you tricked
that's all
me.
That's all on me. Guns or knives?
Oh, shoot. I mean, this is IRL question, right? You're talking about, no. I mean, I guess
any way you want to approach it.
I guess when I think of. I guess guns, yeah. More I've played less knife games than I'm into, for sure.
All right, last one then. Sequel or original? So, I'm thinking like, you know, your favorite developer. Do you want them to make a sequel to one of your favorite games, or do you want them to make an original game?
Oh, okay. You know, I guess original. Original sounds good to me. Like, I do sometimes think of like, oh, like this would be cool, like this sequel or whatever. Or like sometimes we did a Chameleon Twist on Flashback 64, and our friend Corey made this point. I was thinking about it too, playing like you use your tongue and you suck things in, and it did, and we were saying like the game felt like a mix of like Kirby and Yoshi, and he was like, oh, it could have been a cool like Yoshi style game, but it's like it didn't need to be a Yoshi game though. Mm-hmm. You know, it never not everything needs to be a Yoshi game, but just made us go there in our minds, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, cool. Those are the this or that's right there. Let's jump into an icebreaker here, and we'll get into the main topic then too. I'll do this one on you. I like this. This is fun. This is just simple question. Two-part question. First question. What is one of your favorite games or even franchises? It doesn't have to be a single game, but what is one of your favorite games or franchises?
Oh, just in general.
Yeah, that's the first part. It's the easy part.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm trying to avoid this, but I'm just going to say Legend of Zelda. Because if you're throwing a curveball at me, I feel like I'm the most equipped to talk about Zelda.
All right. Now you have to give it a new title. Imagine it could not be called The Legend of Zelda. Those words were taken. They just forgot those words. They just haven't named this series yet. You know, whatever the reason is, give it a new title without using any of those words.
Well, you know, this is pretty easy, actually, because, you know, people talk about the name. They're like, what? It's Zelda. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the original game, Hyrule Fantasy or whatever the Japanese title, like that's kind of sick. I feel like that could be the title for any of the games.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it. Okay, nice. I got an easy one.
That's funny. I asked this to a previous guest as well. I think it was either Brian Rigsby, maybe? Maybe I'm miscrediting this to somebody. But they said same thing. They picked Zelda, but they named it The Adventures of Link.
And that's good, like, oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, like Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link, I mean, just call the games like The Adventures of Link, and it, you know, it would just fit just as well. But cool. All right, Hyrule Fantasy. You can play Hyrule Fantasy Wind Waker today, and it's a good game that could be better that maybe we'll discuss in a future episode.
Mm-hmm.
But today, for our topic, we are going to talk about presentation. So what that means to us, you know, like what is one of our favorite console looks, you know, and maybe not just the console, but like, you know, do we like the controller design, some of the accessories, are there like, you know, the case and box styles they used for things, you know, special or, you know, or is it just the console itself that we loved? But yeah, Gu, what is one of your favorite console looks?
So you said something before we started recording that kind of changed my answer a little bit, because my initial thing I was thinking of was I love the GameCube, you know, I just love that it's a cube and the colors they picked were cool. I always liked that purple and the orange variants. And, I love when you start it up and it does the little cube thing. And, the controller, there's stuff to be said about it. I think then we get into, like, you know, there's certain controllers I like more, like, just to actually play on compared to, like, aesthetically. You know what I mean? So the GameCube controller, I think it's not the best, even though there's a lot of love for it. But just the look of it is cool. But then before we were talking, you mentioned, like, also, like, the design of, like, the packaging and stuff like that. And you actually brought up, like, the N64, like, packaging, the way they did their boxes. And it got me thinking, like, even, like, their controller boxes looked cool. Like, we still have, like, one of McKenna's old, like, N64 controller boxes. And it has the same type of, like, branding, and it's got the same colors on everything as their game boxes and the console boxes. So, I kind of want to change my answer to that. I didn't want to be basic and pick the Nintendo 64.
What's the name of your plot? What's the name of your podcast again?
Flashback 32.
Oh, there we go. That's right.
Yeah. But, when I come to think about the total package, like, that does it for me. Cause the GameCube, like, boxes and things like that, like, they look cool and stuff too, but nothing hits like the N64.
We could probably dabble and still talk about both. I always thought it was interesting with the GameCube boxes. They weren't just like DVD like cases. Looks like the PS2. I guess the PS2 had like that weird little memory card slot inside their boxes for whatever reason. I mean, people didn't have that many memory cards that each game needed to maybe store one in it. But that standard type of DVD shell, like the Xbox and PlayStation used that. The GameCube, they had that strange, like, it was like that thick squared off like edge and everything, like once you open up the boxes, and like it had like a lot of the different like inset with like clips for the instruction manuals and stuff. I always thought that was interesting how they went solo and tried something special there. But the Nintendo 64 one, I think, is a really cool design, and I think that like they really thought out the detail of it, because when you look at a game box for Nintendo 64 on the like the red stripe, you know, it would be peeling away like a sticker, and it would tell you if it was like a Nintendo exclusive, like only on Nintendo 64, which I thought was cool, because they were even like showing that their brand, like, and their design, like, you know, was like applied to all of this in like a specific way. But the little red stripe on the side, that's where you had like details about how many players like it support, like, you know, what accessories were required or things like that. It was always like the red meant like information would be given to you here. And they also did that like on the accessories and on the system box itself. Like, that's where they broke down like the features and what it could do and everything. So they clearly had like a well thought out like marketing plan for all of this, for not just the game like packaging, but also for the system and accessories and like how that like fit into the overall branding of it all. And I always thought that was really cool, like a really neat like attention to detail.
It's almost too iconic, because I think We've tried to avoid it, and this is not dissing, because even our friends and stuff have, but like a lot of people do kind of replicate that, like for their, you know, for their projects and stuff. And I'm like, I'm almost like, yeah, it's just like, it's too good. I don't even want to try to match that. But that is good, like practical design too. Like you know where to look to see, like, oh, how many, you know, I find myself, or not so much anymore, because I'm not looking at game boxes as much, but, you know, I would always like flip around, where is that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was always, it's always set in that same way, so you know exactly where to look. I mean, the back of a PlayStation case, you know, it would tell you how many players it was, but it's like, it was set right above like the legal text and like the mid. Lower left mid area, like, you know, it's like not necessarily like it doesn't catch your eye or like stand right out to it or anything like that, whereas it's like pretty prominent there. And then like the edges of all the boxes, they had like the green and blue like edges for it all, and they were like semi-transparent with like more like key art from like the games and everything, or more like different angles of like the accessories or whatever. Maybe it was like a neat like design. And I'm pretty sure all of those colors are like the colors on like the controller and everything that they use in the, even like the Nintendo 64 like like cubed logo, like the blue button, the green button, the yellow C buttons, the red start button. Like those are all like those colors that they use around like the box edges and box design, all that stuff. So like, I really liked their attention to detail with those things.
And well, both consoles had cool logos. I thought they both had cool logos, GameCube and N64. And also I talked a little bit about the GameCube color variants, but Nintendo 64 has sick color variants. I've never owned any of them. I have like a bunch of gray N64s, but I do love, you know, the controller. Like what I think one of the best like selections of like controller and console colors that there is.
Is that controller and console colors with a K, like Mortal Kombat, or is those are just traditional C?
Because it's too many Ks.
That's three Ks.
Too many Ks. Yeah, we can't do that.
Yes, Krusty's comedy comeback. I do like that. Like a. I mean, that specificness, you know, of how that's all like design and everything, and having it be like that. It's not the first system that, you know, had multiplayer games, but it was one that like made it so accessible and so easy to just jump into, having four controller ports and needing no other accessories, but having everyone basically bring their controller, and they had in their controller had a controller pack with a K, just only by itself, no C in that, just PAK. But like the idea of that, like each player could have like their profile or their data or their whatever, like in their controller, and they can come up and plug it into that system and jump in, and then having all those different color varieties, like kind of let you personalize and like let you be you type of thing in what you were doing and how you're playing with your friends and everything, which I always thought was really neat.
You have your matching Game Boy, you know, with you too. Just be all colorful. Step away from like my Nintendo sort of fanboyism though, and more lean more to my like that era when I was 8 years old fanboyism, 8 to 12 with the GameCube and N64. I think if you showed me any console from that era, I would be like, this is the best, you know. So like PS1, PS2, Dreamcast. I've never even played Sega Saturn before, but when I see a picture of it, I'm like, This rocks. Like, this looks so cool. So I think I'm very much like that era of gaming. Like, just show me a console from there, I'm like, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, the Dreamcast, we spoke about it on a previous episode. Whoever last answered this question, I spoke about the Dreamcast. And that meaty little box, it's not as big as you think it would be, but like when you pick it up, it's really dense. Like, it's got weight to it, and like, you don't feel like there's any empty plastic on any of the edges or under anything. Like, there's, like, literal components, like, top to bottom, front to back, like, just building that thing. And that just, to me, just always felt cool. Like, picking it up and, like, taking it over to a friend's house and all that stuff and packing it up, I was always, like, super careful with it and everything. And, like, it just was, like, this really cool, like, artifact and everything. Like, the 64, and similar to the PlayStation, it had its big design, but like you could pick up a 64 and sometimes feel like, am I just holding a shell? Like, is there any like hardware actually underneath of this? Like, you can kind of like feel like almost a hollow type of like volume to it and everything. You know, it doesn't necessarily always feel as like weighty as maybe something that size should be.
It's a little weird looking. Like, the actual shape of that one is weird looking. Yeah.
They have the little rounded like front edges for like that, like kind of like pop out. I'm looking at a picture of it and everything, but like that's where like, you know, the foot pads like rest to kind of keep it like just slightly lifted off the like tabletop or wherever you have it installed. And then it has that little like bump, like, you know, in the center of it that kind of goes back to the cartridge slot and everything. So it is definitely a unique shape. And like when you do design something like that, you force people to not be able to stack things on top of it. You know, like you need the cartridge slot exposed at the top to put a game in. Mm-hmm. It's got that little lump and everything. So it's not like you couldn't bury that. And like, you know, like I often have saw people like they had their PS2 like set horizontally and everything, but then they'd have other systems set on top of it, or they'd have other things like set on top of it, and you almost like buried the cool like aesthetic design of it and everything. Like, you can't do that with the 64. Like, it literally has to be the top of whatever it is that you're setting it on, because it does not make it convenient for you to like put anything on top of it.
It's a nice ornament.
Especially if you have that that Hey You Pikachu edition. Had that extra bulbous like Pikachu like like branching off the side and everything. You really weren't setting anything on top of that.
No.
Did you have any favorite accessories for your Nintendo 64? What were some key and must-have accessories in your mind?
Ooh, okay. That's, you know, I'm getting more into that now. Like, just like when I was a kid, a lot of games I played, I wouldn't even need like controller packs or anything like that. But now doing everything, I really need it. That's not an exciting accessory, though. You know, when I was a kid, I did actually have Hey You Pikachu, and I did have that mic or whatever. But that's not my favorite. No. You know what? My favorite one was that transfer pack, because I did have Pokemon, and I would prefer to play it even then, like on my TV with Pokemon Stadium and everything. So I think I got to give it up for that, for accessories, because even if that was the only thing I used it for, but it was like amazing.
Yeah, an interesting interface to plug in your Game Boy games into your 64. A lot of like potential for a lot of their accessories. Like I said, like the ability for all the controllers to have that like that slot on there for that data and for your memory cards, or, you know, however you wanted to use it for. Like, the concepts are already there. Like, my friends and I would, we played a ton of like NBA Hang Time, you know, like the kind of semi follow up to NBA Jam. And you could have your win and loss record, your custom character, like, you know, all of that stuff saved to your memory card, your controller pack. And we always thought it would be rad, like, if you can go to the arcades and they just had, like, if they had, like the slot for the little controller pack right there, you could just plug it in and kind of continue to go and, you know, get your win and loss record up, whoever you play against, and bring your custom character there, whoever you play against. Like, the technology idea was possible there. It just never really, like, fully did that. I mean, there have been some games where you could bring in...
Didn't Blitz have that or something like that? I feel like there's a version of Blitz that might have had that.
Yeah, I think that there was. Yeah, it's something that I always wanted to see like take off a lot more than it ever really did. Instead of it being just an arbitrary like one or two games here and there, like, you know, the idea of being able to kind of take your personal data around and use that was always like super cool. It's interesting that they moved away from that controller like additional like expansion bay. Because the GameCube got rid of it, the Wii, I guess, had you could plug in your nunchuck and you can plug in your Motion Plus, you know, if you were a premature adopter, an early adopter. So that technically had a little expansion bay there. Yeah, and then the Switch, I guess. I skipped the Wii U. Yeah, everybody did. But the Switch has technically your Joy-Cons and everything, and it has USB-C on the bottom. You can put it in a dock. You know, obviously, it does a lot more. But from Nintendo, like, the Dreamcast had... their controllers had the little slots for the VMUs, so they actually had, like, you could put their memory cards, like, in there, and they had a little screen on it and everything, but that was based on the controller itself. And the Xbox also... used an expansion slot on their controller for the original Xbox, which, yeah, I like the idea of that potential for expansion, but, you know, I guess never really got used, you know, to its full extent, and so they chose not to do that anymore.
Probably, like, being able to just put Rumble into the controllers killed that big time, too, because I feel like, other than saving, the number one, like, thing to use that for was the Rumble pack, and it's like, well, yeah, I guess... what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, there's even games that like would tell you, like the wrestling games, like once you start it up and it would load the data, then it would tell you like a prompt saying memory loaded, you can now insert your Rumble pack now, like it, like, hey, it's safe, you can take out that one accessory and put something else in there and everything for the Nintendo 64. But then it seems wrong.
Like, I'm not pulling out my memory card during the game I'm playing on. What are you talking about? That's safe. Crazy.
Telling you it's safe to do. Okay. How about that expansion pack? Did you own one of those? Were you required to own one of those? I guess for Perfect Dark, you'd probably want to have one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was big into, obviously, I was big into Majora's Mask. Mm. That was like one of my first big Zelda games I really fell in love with. But I had all those games. I had Donkey Kong 64 had it also. I had that. So I don't know. I'm still pretty young at that point I'm like 9 or 10 when that came out, and I don't quite remember what game sparked needing it, but I guess I got it at some point because I played all those games.
You need it. It is required for Donkey Kong 64, but I think it just enhanced Perfect Dark, and I don't know if you needed it for Majora's Mask. I think it also just enhanced that game as well. But the Donkey Kong thing too, it required it. But I remember reading something about it not that long ago. That was actually just a design bug. Like, they literally was some kind of programming error, and it was like a memory flaw. And instead of like finding and fixing it because it was going to be such a pain, or it was like, you know, it was crunch time, they just required that expansion pack so that it would never like get too far along into like this memory crashing bug and everything. And I thought it was such an odd thing, but like, that's the fix. Like, require this entire like separate accessory to be packaged with and sold the game, and
so much more money too. Like, that's one thing. I think it was required for Majora's Mask because one of my other friends who's a big Zelda head was talking about like how expensive it was at the time to play Majora's Mask, you know, because he didn't have any of those other games that required it. So it was like, but he, you know, it was like, okay, I want to play the new Zelda game. And it's like, oh, I have to buy this extra. I think some games came, that might've been it. I think Donkey Kong, they sold a version that came with it. I might've gotten that.
I think Donkey Kong, yeah, all of them were bundled with it like that, or at least the first wave of them were bundled. Like, it included that, just like the Rumble Pack with Star Fox and stuff.
Right. Okay.
Majora's Mask did require it, actually. So yeah. And then Perfect Dark lists on their cover, it lists expansion pack required for maximum gameplay. So if you wanted to
there
do
might be
like
some modes that are you can't do, right?
Yeah. Multiplayer was severely limited, and I don't think you could do co-op at all without it. Yeah, I mean, that's what people were playing that game for. So you gotta have it. Gotsta. And then Glover 2 also required it. So, oh no, I'm just kidding. I have no idea. Sorry, Glover. Just random shot there, Glover.
Five shots at Glover.
Anything else then? 64 related. Any other final notes maybe you want to kind of share about its design and, you know, what it means to you and, you know, why you love it?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. Yeah. Like, it's just, you know, it's not even my favorite console. It's just, you know, it is just like such a bedrock for me of like my gaming that it's like, I always go to it. But like, when I think about like, what is actually like the best, like, I mean, I don't have to tell you, you know, it's not actually like probably the best. It's just, that's just what I grew up with, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a fun console. I mean, I got it shortly after launch. I was obsessing over reading about it. Like, I was really jazzed to get it. And I loved my, you know, I had it for about a year-ish and some change. But then I was like old enough to like make the decision like, hey, parents, I don't want this anymore. Like, I want this PlayStation thing. Like, you know, so then we, you know, managed to like sell it and trade it in and save some money up for a PlayStation and everything. And it's just so weird to me because I don't remember making that decision at all. I remember wanting to and everything, but I don't know how it worked out. But yeah, I mean, the Nintendo 64, I did love. I enjoyed it and I played a ton of it and it was great, but yeah, something about it then even was like, hey, you're not exciting to me anymore, Nintendo 64. I'm sorry. I want to leave you. And I set sails to the Sony PlayStation.
I did have did I ever tell you I had a moment like that with the PS2 where I switched sides for like very brief period of time?
No, I didn't. I don't think I've heard that story.
Yeah, when I think I hadn't gotten a GameCube yet. I've never gotten a console like right when it came out, actually, until Switch 2, actually, I'm getting. But anyway, I went to a friend's house and I played Vice City, and he was like, and I was like, all right, it's time to go to bed. It was his older brother's, and I just stayed up all night playing that game. I was like hooked, you know,
you can cuss. If you're talking about Grand Theft Auto, I think it's only appropriate you cuss.
Okay, I was just fucking around all night in this game. The sun came up, and I was like, I need this. So I got a PlayStation, I got PS2, I got GTA Vice City, and then I got Soul Calibur 2, But I was like, I want to play as my boy Link. And then there were Zelda games and I couldn't afford both. And I was like, I gotta get GameCube. I'm sorry. You know, so that Nintendo, like them having their like grip on me, it started way back then, you know, whereas like I had to go back to the Nintendo side for my Zelda.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, we got the PS2 launch day, October 26, 2000. You guys remember that? Like we had it from day one, we played it and loved it and everything. And when the GameCube dropped to $99, when they like price cut, you know, like, you know, 2 years or so into its console life or something like that, you know, everyone kind of cut their price slowly over time and stuff. But when the GameCube hit that $99 like price point, they had a bundle with Metroid Prime at the time. My brother had just gotten like his first job. He worked at like Auntie Anne's Pretzels and, you know, he didn't have any like bills or anything. He still lived at home and stuff like that. And so one day we're just like, we're playing PlayStation. And he's like, you want to go get a GameCube? And I was like, yeah. I was, I'm not going to say no to more video games. And so I remember he just took this random drive to like Walmart or Target or something like that. And we just walked up to the counter and we're like, yeah, we want to buy a GameCube. And so he got the GameCube, got like a memory card. It was the bundle with Metroid Prime, like paid for it all, like on the spot. It was like so weird to like see this all happen in front of me. And we went back home, hooked it up and just started playing some GameCube. And
that's awesome.
I loved my GameCube time. Like that wasn't mine. My brother ended up taking that GameCube, but I did get my own GameCube, having that in like the Game Boy player. And as I mentioned before, I think this is a drawback to recording back-to-back episodes. I think the conversation we had about the Game Boy Advance and portable gaming was in our previous episode. So call back to weeks ago when you guys listened to that episode.
Remember that? Yeah.
Would I be out and about playing that Game Boy Advance and everything? You know, a game like Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, loved it portably, but when you played it on the Game Boy player, it enhanced the game. So if you like walked over random spots in the world, your controller would vibrate, and that would be like a hidden spot that you can find a hidden item in that you would never be able to find unless you knew exactly where to go on the Game Boy Advance, because it was enhanced with the Game Boy player for whatever reason. Like a handful of games like did that, but I remember being able to take like cool games I was playing on the go, but then come back and just play them on the big screen, and like it was like super jazzed to do it. And like the GameCube was, yeah, just super cool, super good era of gaming for me, for sure. And you know, if only Nintendo would do a console where you could play it on your screen at home and then like take it with you on the go and everything. Like if they ever did that, they'd have my money, that's for sure.
It's a $1 million idea. Yeah,
maybe one day, Nintendo. All right, well, we did it then. This ended up being a little bit of a longer episode. Yeah, these questions, sometimes I think this question would be a pretty short and sweet episode, but we did the opposite. We broke it.
Sorry.
I don't think it helps that we talk about all that music stuff in the beginning and lost half the listeners. But that's all I got then. Goo, anything, any parting words or anything else you want to share before we wrap up the episode?
No, thanks for having me on. And yeah, check out soundstone.network.
Soundstone.network.
Brand synergy.
Yeah, I wanted to say like some kind of catchphrase or something, but we don't have one yet.
We should get get S or get out. No.
Okay. Well, that is another episode. And if you like it, leave a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. I never ask for this. I forget to ask for this, but, please do that. And if you don't like it, don't say anything, and that's okay. You just move on. It's really weird that you've listened to 40 minutes of this podcast if you don't like it. But if you are listening to this it must mean you do like it. So please consider doing that. Same thing, drop some reviews and go listen to Flashback 64 and Kirby Conversations as part of the Soundstone Network. Brand Synergy, episode over. Goodbye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.